Whether you're a polyamateur or polyambitious, polyambiguous or polyam, I really hold your head high. Let your freaky flag fly, 'cause your polyamory should be uncensored.
Hi there, and welcome to Polyamory Uncensored, a podcast where we, your hosts, Lindsay Miller
and Katie Williams,
interview a poly person each episode, and we try to answer the five points of journalism. Who, what, when, where, and why, as it pertains to our poly lives.
Hello, and welcome to episode 88, where we are talking with Rich about anonymity and privacy on the internet. Stay tuned as we talk about the good, the bad, the ugly, and the just plain complicated truths about our poly lives.
All right, Rich, who are you?
Well, I'm a technical geek. I've studied information security and privacy for years and years, and teach about it. I'm kind of keeping my identity a little loose. I'm also poly, and I'm a cis, bi, big burly dude.
So, Rich, what does polyamory mean to you?
You know, everybody says freedom, and I gotta wonder. I hear that a lot, and I agree with freedom. I think that I spent a lot of my life. I was married. I got married at about 20, and for the first time, we call it the starter marriage, and realized that we were not compatible sexually in a lot of ways, and our opening up sort of brought me to that freedom, and I realized it was super important and much more important to me than it was to her. So that's what I mean, I guess, by freedom, not just sex, of course, but it turns out awesome relationships come along too.
So you were not open with your first marriage?
We opened up about 5 years before the divorce, 6 years. We started out with swinging and fell in love with another couple. And we were a quad for about 3 years, which was really fantastic until it wasn't. Mm-hmm. We had a partner go through a double mastectomy, do a breast cancer scare, things like that. It was a big deal. And it's hard, you know, that was a really hard breakup when that all kind of blew up.
Sure.
Yeah. So what drew you to polyamory?
Well, it had to be the sex and the sexual variety to begin with. I'm going to be totally honest there. I was, like I said, my marriage started out pretty low sex, and that there was some issues. We weren't good at handling it. There was actually early on the internet, non-monogamy porn that was amateur. And I kind of really liked it. And I thought, yeah, but this doesn't happen in real life. I watched that for a long time. And I thought, and it was just like, oh, wow, that's amazing. And then we had some incidents in our marriage and that blew that wide open. Sort of blew us open to considering non-monogamy. And then we found, you know, oh, wow, okay, we can do better than that. You know, we can do better. Ooh, that's tricky. We can grow beyond that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was the one sort of in the group who was about reading books and listening to podcasts and studying. And then the more I read the sort of standard books we would all think of back then, like, oh, this is okay. As long as everybody's okay with it, this is okay. And so I was really cautious, but once we fell in love with this other couple, that was, we were there. Yeah.
So what kind of things do you find difficult about polyamory?
Well, sometimes the lows are pretty low. I find sometimes my insecurities can really be pretty strong. I've got a nesting partner and about three girlfriends right now at various levels of intimacy. And if they're all, you know, if there's all something going on, or it feels like I'm not getting attention and, or whatever, which has been happening a lot because there's been a lot of things going on in our lives with COVID and sickness and things like that. And that's, it's worse to feel like you're disconnected from three than just one.
Right. It's interesting. Also, the dichotomy of like the really, really high highs make all of those lows, even if they would have been normal, like in a different or a monogamous relationship or something, they feel so much lower because the highs are so high. Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. The other thing I struggle with, I'm much better at now, is managing managing time and managing needs across partners. I had a lot of arguments about that in my past with my ex-wife and in this quad I was in that made it, it didn't feel real safe sometimes to share that I needed to go see somebody or whatever. And so I'm having to unlearn that and say, okay, no, I need to do this. How can we do it versus sort of bottling it up?
Yeah. I feel like that's a huge issue. Like communicating your actual wants and desires and needs. I mean, it took me forever. Oh, forever. I still work on it. Still working on it all the time.
Yeah. It's definitely an extremely challenging thing, even to sometimes recognize your needs.
For sure. Right. And, I can share that when my self-esteem gets low, it's very hard for me to articulate needs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I saw this like reductress post recently that was like, are you even good enough to have imposter syndrome? And I was like, oh, helps. I loved it so much. And I keep thinking about it. It keeps coming up where I'm like, you know, where it's like that. Yeah. And relating to Polly, where it's like, you're not even good enough to think about the fact that, you know, you should feel insecure about this or something, you know, and of course it's just mind brain weasels being shitty to you, but I'm like, oh, felt.
Yeah. Yep. So when did you first know that you were poly? Was it, you've sort of talked about this.
I think it was right. Because, you know, I started out, I read all the swinger, you know, very sort of older stuff. I think I didn't really accept the idea until there was sort of this thing going on with this other couple where feelings were coming in and I was doing what I do, what I especially used to do, which was shove them down. This isn't going to be okay with my marriage, or this isn't going to be okay. Very scary. And I had a good mental model for all this. I'd read all the books, you know, and all this stuff. And my wife said, so how do you feel about this person? And it just came out. And I'm like, oh, I love her. And that was okay. And I mean, so it was sort of in that process. And then, of course, the massive amount of fucking opportunities for growth.
I think you were saying fucking opportunities, and I was like, sure. Oh, opportunities for growth, and also probably fucking opportunities for growth.
There was a lot of fucking going on. Yes, for sure.
I suspect that's a turn of phrase that you like quite a bit there, because it does have all those layers of meaning.
Yeah. The fog. Yes. The another fucking opportunity for growth is a fog. Yes. I use that term regularly. It was especially bad then. As far as the other definition that Lindsay was messing with. It's one thing to show up at a swinger friendly campground with a quad where everybody's really slutty. A lot of stuff goes down.
Mm-hmm. I bet.
You know? Yeah. So there was a lot of that too.
When, if ever, did you start to feel different, or have you like felt different from other folks?
Oh, yeah. This is hard because I felt like a black sheep my whole, I felt like a weird kind of black sheep my whole life. Are we talking about, like, if we're talking about sex and poly stuff?
I mean, or anything.
You can answer it in whatever context. I can't imagine that somebody who turns out to teach computer security as a career was not kind of experiencing themselves as the weird kid.
I went through, you know, okay. So I'll give a quick bio to just give you that idea. So I grew up out of town in the country, 7 miles from my high school, and the nearest town had 180 people in it.
Small.
Very small school, very traditional, you know, jocks rule the school sort of thing. Geeks definitely not, overweight. You know, I would have put my friends until late in high school, I'd have put my number of friends at under one hand, you know, under five. Right. So, I was weird, you know, and
that's a pretty common answer for us, honestly, like always absolutely. Is the most answered question. When did you start to feel different? Always.
I will say this, my first thoughts or my first inclinations about poly and things like that came from Robert Heinlein science fiction novels.
Sure.
Which some are, I think they're quite entertaining. There's a lot of problematic stuff in them.
Some of them have aged very poorly.
Yeah, I tried to read Stranger in a Strange Land and I was like, what the fuck is this?
Reading it 25 or 30 years ago, it did not seem as deeply problematic as it seems now.
Right, totally. And I could see that, but I also am like,
but well, honestly, this isn't even then, anymore. I can't remember the name of the book now, but I went on a like obsessive dive in the late 80s or early 90s with reading Robert Heinlein. And one of the books that I found that was fairly early in his career, which was not very, you know, not one of his more, everybody should have group marriages of mostly women. It was this incredibly racist war book where the Chinese had developed a weapon that killed in a race-based way. So it was like leaving all the property alive, like fine in North America, but killing all of the people. Only it was really clear that they meant all of the white people. And he just was like, not even acknowledging the existence of African-Americans.
Mm. Wow.
And that was kind of my breakup moment with Robert Heinlein.
Oh, for sure. I read I read all this stuff in school, and you know, you pick what you want, you throw it away.
Yeah.
But I get
what you're saying. Like, I remember reading Friday and her plural marriage. I wish listeners that you could see Rich's expression. He like lit up, thumbs went up, like he got what I was saying. And yeah, that made a big impression on me too. It didn't seem like anything that could possibly happen in my real life. But it's
right. It's science fiction. So many people read that and were like, oh, right. In a fantasy world, that's cool. That's neat. But that's not reality. But so many people did it. I think we're inspired by that. And we're like, but what if it could be
reality? Right. And it did in that book, man, I don't want to go down. I could go down this rabbit hole all day. But that book, you know, not really a spoiler because it happens almost immediately. Her family divorces her. Like immediately she's kicked out of a plural marriage almost immediately. One that seemed really idyllic. But it also deals with things like, well, she wanted casual sex too. Mm-hmm. And hooks up with couples along the way. And probably a lot of other stuff that I don't quite remember.
Yeah.
But a very strong woman character. And my ex actually loved that book too. Cause we read it That's in high cool. school together.
Oh my gosh. Wow.
It was on my high school's shelves because I had a cool librarian.
It sounds like you had a cool librarian. That's awesome. I mean, librarians are amazing. Librarians want kids to read anything they want to. And for the most part, librarians want that. Not librarians want kids to read what they want to for the most part. Let me be clear about that. Most librarians are down with kids reading whatever. And I love that in spite of the fact that you were in this really tiny community, you still had an amazing librarian who was like, let's get a wide range of things because we got to appeal to all of the readers.
Yeah, since I'm pseudonymous here, I can say that she actually let me, she actually told me where the box of stuff she'd taken off the shelves was.
Oh, wow.
That's awesome. Good.
That just makes them so much more appealing, too. Like all of those, banned books, those are the ones that I'm like, I have to read this. I have to go and find all of these books.
Right. Here's the list of books that I think I want to check out. Mm-hmm. Yep. So moving on sort of to our standard questions, though this was a very fun digression, where would you say that you are in your poly journey? Are you in your Friday like plural marriage? No.
I don't want that.
I was mostly kidding.
Yeah, I don't want it. I have an amazing nesting partner who helps me and makes me a better person all the time. And she's an introvert. I'm an extrovert. She is sort of developing along the way with this, we're talking about the journey and am I where I am? Well, this relationship I'm proud of, I'm really proud of it because we met on a one night stand in a bar. Right. And it's a hilarious story that I'm not going to tell right now, but anyway,
yeah,
but we were hooking up. And about every other week or whatever, and feelings started to develop. And of course, when I first met her, I told her about poly and I told her about swinging and all this stuff and my partners that I had one other partner at the time and all these things. And I kept expecting her to put her drink down and leave. And she didn't. And so over the course of months, we spent more time, actually went on a date, went on some dates, feelings were developing. And I said, okay. And I was going through my divorce actually at this time. I can't remember quite how it all laid out, but anyway, she drops the, I love you. And I'm like, yeah, me too. And we're going to deal with this. And I said, here's what I want to do. I'm afraid. She's never done anything like this. She'd been married. I said, let's do a book club. And so we took more than two at the time. Mm-hmm. And we read a chapter or two a week, and then we talked about it every week.
I love that. That's awesome.
Yeah. And then we skipped on, and we just, the next week, we'd take another chapter or two, and we'd sit there and talk about it and go back and forth about how we felt about the various parts.
That's a huge book, too. That'll take you a good year, huh?
it really went pretty months. Fast. Because you get towards the end, maybe it's not, it wasn't as important. But it got us through a lot of the different coping things. It got us through, how do you feel about jealousy? And what do you, what do you want? And, I saw it as a way to intentionally sort of form that relationship.
That's very cool.
That's a really good idea. Yeah.
Well, thank you. I'm kind of really proud of it doing it that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think it headed off a lot of the challenges early. We certainly did have some challenges, but now it's very, if I've got feelings for someone, it's a congratulatory moment. Oh yeah. And vice versa. Right. And she's starting to actually sort of spread her wings a little bit. She's got a sexy trip planned in a few weeks.
Ooh, good for her.
Without me, her first. Yeah. So we'll see.
So where do you hope to go? Or do you have any poly goals?
I have no idea. I can't say I have any goals. Just keep meeting awesome people, making awesome contacts, having great, crazy, kinky sex too.
Yeah.
That seems like a very good goal.
Yeah.
So why would you say that you are poly?
Well, I think I was very, we talked about those Heinlein books. I was very like that was changing for me. Some of those books, including Stranger in a Strange Land at the time. Mm-hmm. Right. Really made me question all the sort of standard relationship models. And So there, you know, so that's part of it. But I think, you know, I believed, well, nobody really does this. And then also the other part was, you know, so I had this, I think I had this wanting, I wanted to be there. I wanted that thing, but I had such poor self-esteem, you know, in my 20s and certainly before. There's no way I could have. Mm-hmm. Right. And I think, you know, just over time, it got to the point where, oh, wow, I can kind of do some version of this that's fulfilling.
Mm-hmm. And why did you agree to be interviewed today?
Well, I like attention. I do think some of the things I know are going to be useful for your listeners. And, you know, I want to be a help to the community.
Awesome. Terrific. Well, thank you.
Mm-hmm. All right. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back.
Interested in more Polyamory Uncensored content? You're in luck. We just started a blog, polyamoryuncensored.wordpress.com. We're going to be showcasing stuff like episode breakdowns, polyamory and ethical non-monogamy related book reviews, and guest posts from authors like you. If you'd like to be a guest author, contact us at polyamoryuncensored@gmail.com, and you might be able to see your work up on our website. Again, that's polyamoryuncensored.wordpress.com, and we're going to have some fun, new poly-related content for you. Thanks. See you there.
All right, welcome back. And we are talking to Rich today about being safe on the internet and how that can relate to, like, also being poly and your poly identity when it comes to safety. What are some struggles that are maybe unique to poly folks when it comes to internet privacy?
Well, for me, I'm out to a lot of friends, but I'm not out at work, and same. I'm not out to my family, and certainly not, you know, so certainly not large numbers of folks. I wish I could just throw off the cloak of anonymity and just go fully public, but I just can't for, you know, lots of practical reasons. And so I think for me, it's a lot about protecting your identity, when you're doing that dating. And identity can mean more than just who you are. It can mean where you live, mm-hmm. right? That's a terrifying one. And it can also mean, there's one other aspect I like to talk about is if you have kids, or if you have partners that use the same computer, or kids that use the same computer, you may say, well, it's okay, you know, my partner, whatever. But I don't know about you, but if you're, you know, if you got nude photos or sexies or whatever, you don't, you know, I don't want my kids running across that. And sometimes kids are much better than their parents at finding stuff, right? So, you know, for me, it kind of starts with protecting the home base.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, absolutely.
Right. And being thoughtful about that and then sort of working outward.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. Like, I definitely my kids are older now, so they have their own phones and, you know, Chromebooks for school and things like that. So there's not shared devices. But definitely when they were younger and there were, putting things like using Photo Vault and other similar kind of apps to make the not kid-friendly pictures not kid-accessible, you know, using things like either passwords, passcodes, biometric identifiers, those kinds of things.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And so I guess, you know, what I would start out with, so gosh, we're starting at home. You know, if you have a home computer, you share. And even if you don't, if you have a computer that you might use for multiple purposes, right? So let's say you have a laptop you might use for working related things, and you might use it for dating related things or personal related things. Now, I'm going to be real careful here because if it's computer provided by work, mm-hmm. right? You're getting into you're getting into a dangerous situation there.
Right.
Right. Because there are sort of spyware and control things that it's very easy for them to monitor what you're doing. And it depends upon how paranoid security conscious your employer is, right? So it's, you know, it's a good idea to stay away from those work computers. But that doesn't mean you don't have your own business and you've got a laptop and you use it for this and that and everything else. And if your kids have access to this. So the first thing is, for your home computer, create multiple user accounts. At least two. Mm-hmm. At least two. One that you just use for vanilla and work sort of stuff. Stuff you don't worry about, perhaps. And another one, which I call test.
Right. You want it to sound boring.
Yeah, not sexy time. No, you don't. Yeah.
Yeah, you don't want to call it my super slutty, super secret username.
Account, yeah.
I call it test. No one has ever been curious about it.
That makes sense. Yeah.
You know, and use that account over there. Okay. Mm-hmm. So then if you're using, so what this does for you is really cool. For one thing, you know, if you're doing something, and this includes your porn watching, by the way. Okay. Mm-hmm. I mean, right. So if you're consuming porn on your computer, many of you are probably using incognito or private browsing mode, right? Mm-hmm. We do that so that we don't, why do you use that mode? Lindsay, do you know why do you use that mode? I'm curious if you know.
My assumption.
I'm not saying you do.
No, I do. My assumption is that so that if I'm typing something, porn sites don't automatically autofill into the web browser and come up randomly.
What you're doing is, so the thing you should know about your web browser, so when you're using Chrome or Edge or whatever, the way they speed things up is they do something called caching. And so when you visit a website, any images that you're downloading, anything that shows up on the page is getting stored, including the things you type, the sites you go to, right? You know about the history, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know about the history. Yeah, those things are getting stored. And that's to speed things up in the future.
Right.
Right? So that's great. But when you don't want those things stored, you know, if you're using a computer, which you don't have any control of, sure, use incognito mode so that what you're doing will basically be thrown away the moment that you close that window of the browser. That's the idea. Okay. And that's a useful thing. But when you're on dating sites or swinging sites, maybe you have a Reddit persona. Maybe you produce a podcast and you've got all these different accounts on all these different cloud services that you use, right? And they're all sort of tied into your lifestyle, perhaps. Mm-hmm. The nice part is when you go into that other user account, don't worry about incognito mode, just use it. Mm-hmm. And let it store that. Go ahead and let it store that stuff, right? Because if you're worried about your kids, that'll keep your kids out of it. Use a nice strong password on it. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to be crazy good. And that'll keep, you know, the average to good kid out of those things. And you don't have to remember them, right? Because then you've got this problem. If you've got, you know, SLS, FetLife, let's see, whatever the dating, you know, I don't know, are any of the regular dating sites have web? Maybe OkCupid is still web.
OkCupid is on web. Cassidy is on web. Yeah.
Cassidy, right? Let the browser or use a password manager, whatever there. Mm-hmm. Let it remember that stuff. Let it help you, right? And it just serves as a nice home base. You do want a few things to do. Yes, definitely use a different password than you normally do. Don't go doing your regular vanilla things in that account. Like, I don't like to use Facebook in that account. Mm-hmm. Right?
Keep them separate. Yeah.
Keep them separate. Although sometimes I do. I'll bring that up in an incognito mode in that. Right? Mm-hmm. So let's see. I've got a whole list. Oh, auto lock the screen on it, right? Set up auto lock for that account. So if you forget it, you know, yeah, it makes a nice home base for you.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, it's a really good idea.
And one of the cool things, if you're a Mac person, which I happen to be, you can register different fingerprints to the different accounts, and I can use a different finger to switch into that mode just by holding it on the little sensor.
That's cool.
That is all really right. cool. And you know what? I have one of those
that.
Sensors.
I'm totally trying that.
I have one of those sensors and I've never used it. I've never set it up. That's so funny. I mean, my kid is 4, so like I don't really have to worry about it at the moment, but good to know in the future.
Yeah.
It makes it super simple. Now, as far as the phone, right? So now we talked about computers, right? And a lot of people went to sleep because who uses a computer anymore, right? Well, you know, it's hard to do good things on your phone. I find it difficult to be careful on the phone. It's hard to, they don't really support multiple identities very well. And so, okay, the obvious things, I have Find My device on so I can go find it if it gets lost. You know, I have a fairly long but easy password, and I do use the fingerprint sensor. You certainly can do things like get photo vault apps where you can store your private photos in there. I find managing those photos really annoying, very error prone. I have an iPhone. Just the fact that you have to go through and hide each photo, and then on iOS, you go through and hide each photo you want to hide, and then there's a hidden folder somewhere, and you have to go into settings and turn the darn thing on to see it and then turn it back off. I would love to see Apple say, well, if there's so much skin tone in this photo, just automatically put it into a...
that's a good idea. Yeah.
Right? That'd be great. Yeah. In photos, so there are a variety of apps. What I do often is I will use private browsing mode in one of the browsers, and maybe I use Chrome for every day, and then I'll just use like Safari for like my, if I want to get on FetLife on my phone or something like that.
One of the things that I did when the kids were younger, and I never changed it, so I guess technically I'm still doing it, is whenever I've been on dating apps or had the dating apps on my phone, they're in a folder marked finance.
Yep.
Good idea.
The kids have the slightest interest in exploring that.
That's so funny. I'm so like, I have folders like dating, photos. You know, yeah. I'm looking at my phone now. I'm like, oh yeah, no, I don't. I don't do any of this yet. But again, it hasn't been an issue.
Yeah, you have a 4-year old. Yeah. So you're still in the lapware zone.
I have a folder called chats, and it's got Kick, Snapchat, but then, you know, all of the dating apps actually join them. Mm-hmm. And I don't try to hide the apps because I try not to let anyone have my phone.
Yeah.
And you know, remember, I think it's almost impossible to hide our behavior and identity from people from Google, Apple, Facebook. That's not what we're talking about here. They don't care. In fact, they love to know that you're poly because, you know, then maybe they will try to sell you, I don't know, improved access to Google Calendar or, sex toys, or I don't know. Right.
Yeah.
So sure. Those are sort of the big things for me on the phone. I kind of give up a little bit. I do try to keep an adult section that I sort of drag photos to, but I'm terrible at it. It's just hard. And just keep in mind, when you're using apps, you know, everything you do with that app, you know, that remote company knows, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, and beyond, right? I mean, Google, you know, if you're using Google apps, then goodness, they know where you've been.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so I'm kind of throwing my arms up, but on the other hand, that's not what I'm worried about. What I'm worried about is getting outed. I'm worried about losing my job, you know?
Yep.
Yeah.
You know. So what do you do to try to prevent that?
Well, so when I started online dating, and we called it just swinging at the time, the very first thing I did was I came up with some online identities for which I could get Gmail accounts. And so I came up with an identity. It was some combination of letters and numbers that was really bad. But it was also the same sort of name I could use as my profile name,
mm-hmm.
right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, if, you know, Lusty Bunny 12, you know, if that's what you want to call yourself, mm-hmm. then go try to see if you can get lustybunny12@gmail.com or some other email provider if you prefer someone who doesn't mine your stuff like Google. that's fine. Sure. Yeah. If you can find them, or, you know, if you want to pay for email, that's cool. And I tend to have separate ones. I have one that I use for, I have one that matches my FetLife account. I have one that I basically use with my partner, my nesting partner, for swinger sites. We both have ready access to that one. And, you know, I have another one that I sort of use for personal and sort of work adjacent stuff. Right. And then of course I have my work account that, which I never try to use anywhere.
Never cross the streams.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
Try not. And so that's the beginning.
Yeah. And the work adjacent email is not LustyBunny12.
Nope.
No.
It's some boring derivation of my actual name.
And I always think that's really interesting, the like, not code names, that's not the right word, but, you know, usernames and stuff. Mm-hmm. Don't advice for folks out there. Hot couple for you, whatever, you know, that's been taken. It's been taken. Get something creative. Like when I see a hot couple for you, I want to puke a little bit. So like, get something creative. Think about it for more than a minute. See if it's available on Gmail, because hot couple for you is not. But, you know, like,
I'm a hot couple for you, unicorns, 69, 69, 69.
Right. No, thank you.
And don't personalize it by putting your city name in. That probably does not make it more creative.
Mm-hmm.
For people.
No, in fact, that really does, you know, narrows it down pretty quick.
Mm-hmm.
There is some hint in one of my, and actually one of my kink email, there is a little bit of a hint as to my, there's a hint to my initials. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
For better or worse.
Right.
And wasn't that smart to begin with. And I had a prospective partner say, "Hey, your online photo's horrible." And I'm like, "Oh, found me, did you?"
Oh no.
Well, and it was okay. I mean, this was someone I had established enough rapport that I was actually telling them where I worked.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, you know, and I knew they had enough. If they just spent a little time, they could find it pretty quick.
Right.
But that email, just that little bit of information, the email really narrowed it down, and she was certain.
Mm. Yeah. Some people are really good at internet stalking, and you can like figure shit out so quickly. I know that I started this like photo website. I used a different name, different email fully. And it was just like an imager or something, you know, like, but I was putting spicy photos on it. Like, this is a safe place I can put it. I could share it, whatever. And one of my friends who is a cam girl, so she knows a lot about internet security. She knows a lot about separating her identity from her like online persona. She was able to take one of my photos and Google search it. And it went right to my Pinterest, which is under Lindsay Miller. And I was like, holy shit, I didn't even know you could do that. I had no idea. Because why would I think about it, you know?
Yes, absolutely. There are reverse image search.
Reverse image search.
Talk about this here. There's reverse image search technology that does try to match your face or your photos, especially if it's an exact copy of the photo.
Yep.
You know, you may have a perfectly vanilla photo, maybe mixed in with your spicy stuff that you're, you know, you're afraid of getting shared.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody takes that and reverse image searches it, and it comes up with you. Well.
And Pinterest is linked to Facebook, is linked to Google, you know, all those things. And, you know, on the internet, you know, starting usernames and stuff, because my name is spelt weird, I just use my name for everything, everything. My Twitter is under Lindsay, my, you know, like Facebook, Pinterest, all of these little things that I have, extra apps, I just use my name because I was like, I don't need to, you know, who cares?
Yeah.
Never knowing that, yeah, everything can be tracked back to that shit.
Yeah, and because
you
of
have
that,
a distinctive look as well. So, you know, there might be people for whom that reverse image search is maybe less precise, but
sure.
I mm-hmm. can see where for you it would not, you know, it'd be a pretty easily identifiable thing.
I immediately deleted everything because I was like so freaked out, but I was just like, whoops, I have to actually think about this. Like, if you are creating an online persona, don't use any images that you would also use on Facebook or anything connected to your real name, because anyone can find it.
Yeah. Or any long segments of text.
Oh, sure. You can search by text.
That's
yeah.
right. Anything. That's right. Anything you can search.
Yes, so like your personal bio. Yeah.
Sure. As someone who catches plagiarizers all the time.
Yeah.
You know, I can tell you, you can take a string of text of, you know, 8 or 9 words, put them in quotes, Google it, you know, and it's going to find it. Right. So yeah,
that makes a lot of sense.
Right. So what I'm telling you is you have to be pretty careful, you know, and you know, people say, okay, if you're sending lewds or sending nudes, you don't want your face or maybe even identifying tattoos in those. That yeah, mm-hmm. definitely don't. Face recognition keeps getting better and better too.
Mm-hmm.
And there's actually a service that's provided to the that's sold to law enforcement agencies as well as anybody else who can afford it. They have went through and basically scooped up all the face photos for everybody they could find everywhere on the net, assigned an identity to them. And so if they get a picture of you somewhere with a face, you can reverse search it.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And so if someone, you know, this is not a cheap service.
Sure.
Right.
But, and I don't know how you even get to it, but that's going to become more of a thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure. It's just going to get easier and easier as time goes on. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, and Google Photos is constantly prompting me, like, is this you? Is this your kid? Is this?
Totally. Yep. Even our phones are doing it. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. It's unfortunate. If you're a sort of a cyber doomsday person, I'm going to give you a little assigned reading here. It's a really short little short story called The Right to Read. It was written by Richard Stallman. The Right to Read, you can read it at some point. It's sort of all about sort of this dystopian future where we don't control our computers.
Oh, wow.
Well, guess what? We're there. You carry them around in your pocket all the time because you don't really control that computer that you, that phone that you carry around. You have very little control of. So it's an interesting geeky story. As we're talking about sharing images, another important thing about images is they have something called EXIF, and that's EXIF. And it's basically metadata. It's information about the photo when it was taken. And some of it's, you know, things like the f-stop of the camera and the exposure and all these things in it. It also includes GPS coordinates when you take it with your phone.
Right.
Wow.
So interestingly enough, you know, I recently finished the entire series of You, which on Netflix, Y-O-U is the name of the show. I don't know if you've ever heard of it. It is about a stalker. I mean, the main character is the stalker and he's speaking in second person to the woman he is stalking. As a Netflix show, I highly recommend it. It's very good. And the third season is all about him opening up his relationship and being poly. And he's even reading more than two at one point, which is really interesting. Their horrible representation of poly. They don't understand the difference between poly and swingers, but that's totally, you know, that's beyond the point. It is still a really fun show. And for being a show about stalking and a murderous psychopath, it is very interesting and fun and good and fun to watch. But he's using all of this to stalk people. He is using the location. He's using the pictures that, you know, his victim is putting on Instagram to locate through image searching where her, you know, the stoop of her porch is listed on Google Maps. And then he finds exactly where she lives. And so he's able to find everything. And watching the show makes me so paranoid because I was like, anyone can do this. Everyone is this open on the internet. Oh my God. You know, like, and then the Twitter location of where her, you know, where she's going to read at a bookstore, and he's able to find all of this shit. And I'm like, wow, I don't know if I'm being paranoid or if this is just common knowledge, but he was able to find her so easily. He's able to stalk her so easily. And it makes a lot of sense.
So Lindsay, let's just go through a little scenario here. Just to make this clear to folks. You know, let's say you and I are chatting and on an online, something online, and you decide and we decide we're going to exchange face photos. Right. Mm-hmm. And maybe it's for an innocuous reason. Maybe it's simply, prove that, you know, we're not dogs or whatever. You know, there's this whole thing, you know,
how do I know that I'm not catfishing? Like, so yeah, often we require that as internet dating people. Like, I want to make sure I'm talking to the person I'm talking to. Yeah, for sure.
So I grab my phone and are you grab your phone and I have provided you an email address. Okay. Mm-hmm. So you take your selfie and you email it to me. You've now shown me within 30 feet where you are.
Yikes. Really?
Yes.
That is so alarming.
Yes. So, or let's say that you take that photo and you say, oh, well, that's a great photo. I'm going to put it on my OnlyFans. Right. And you don't really do any, and I don't know how, I actually know nothing about OnlyFans, but let's say I'm going to put it on my website where I promote my OnlyFans. Mm-hmm. And I just simply copy that in and it is served out. There's a very good chance that EXIF information, that EXIF information with those coordinates will be stored there in that image. Somebody can just simply download it. In fact, a good image program will now just show you, oh, here's where it was taken on the map. Wow. So how do you deal with this? And this is something totally dealable. Okay. So you can deal with this. This is usually images we take with our phones, which means all of them these days, right? But go in and you can turn this off in both Mac or in both iOS and Android. You can turn off this auto location, and you may have to do a little bit of quick Googling, but if you know the EXIF thing, you can quickly Google up and find out how to turn it off on your phone. That's good prevention. If you want to send an image, ironically, most of our chat platforms, things like Facebook Messenger, uploading photos to Facebook. I tried to look into a bunch of these, but most of the tools like Kik, mm-hmm. I believe, and Snap automatically pull this stuff out of your images, which is great. Oh, yeah,
I think a lot of them do.
Yeah, it's just about it's something they do to protect your privacy. Now, on the other hand, guarantee they save that data. Mm-hmm. Right. But it does, for instance, I will frequently use Kik as a sort of first chat platform. And I'm pretty sure Kik filters those out. So just know, don't go texting images or emailing images to people you don't trust. Mm-hmm. And that goes for other kinds of documents too, by the way. PDFs and Word documents, things like that. I happen to have a PDF for a Word document with like all my toys or something like that. I can't remember how I created it, right? And an image. Mm-hmm. Which was kind of a fun project, but I didn't think about it until I was prepping for this talk. And yeah, it's possible that sometimes software sticks information in there. Now, PDF is probably better, and you can certainly go into Acrobat or whatever and tell it to wipe out all that information. You can also tell Word and Office to say, okay, strip out identifying information from those. These are all Googleable things. Mm-hmm. Right. And it's not as common as images, but still, if you're thinking about those things or posting things like that, maybe on your, some of these dating sites, you can do that. Certainly on FetLife, you could do something like that. And you definitely will be careful about those things. You're better off probably sharing something like, a screenshot of it or something like that, because it probably won't have any interesting metadata loaded in there, right? It's just an image, right? Mm-hmm. And it's also harder for somebody to go through and like snarf up, all that information automatically too. Copying text files or just copy and pasting just text in emails, that's okay. Or into messaging and other message platforms. That should be quite safe.
So one of my notes was just like things to look out for. And I guess what I mean by that is I would prefer not to consider online dating a dangerous activity. And I would prefer not to be incredibly paranoid about all of this. But just in a general sense, what are things that we should maybe be more aware of that people probably aren't?
Well, my first thought is I try to get a good rapport on the site and using their chat app long before I go anywhere else. I try not to share enough information for them to, especially on my profile, for them to find me, you know, job. Boy, if you put your job on there and where you work, which I see all the time on things like Bumble, I'm like, oh, well, you know, that it'd be easy to find you. I mean, and maybe that's not so much concern, you know, just for, say, monogamous online dating.
I don't know. I think it probably is.
I think it is, too. You know, especially, yeah, I think it is. But I think people don't think about that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Or they don't think they're going to get fired, you know, like someone who's poly might, or, you know.
Right, or have your kids.
Yeah, possibly, you know, taken away or something.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that's something to think about. You certainly, so here's a one more general, I got two more general internet things for you. One, and I'm going to ask the question of you both.
Okay.
So when you're using your web browser on your computer, one, do you notice the little lock that comes on?
I do.
You do. Lindsay is scrunching her nose.
The lock that comes on for like when you're, I guess I don't know what you mean. No.
Okay. So in Chrome, it's up on the upper left-hand corner right next to the URL.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what that means?
No.
That's the next question.
No.
Okay.
HTTPS versus standard HTTP.
Which is, actually, it's not standard HTTP. It is.
Really? Okay.
It is. Well, I don't want to get into jargon because I know people go to sleep, right?
Yeah.
So what this means is when that lock is up there and it's lit or it's complete, you know, different browsers have different ways of showing it's good. So that's supposed to make you feel secure. And so you can be reasonably sure that no one is listening in to what you're communicating out there on the network, right?
Like,
but there's something.
You definitely see it when you're using your banking software.
Well, every time you go to Google, it's there. Almost all the time now. In fact, browsers actually now, it's like the normal. Like almost everybody's went there. The most important thing it is intended and supposed to do is to show you that you're talking to the right website.
Okay.
So if you have we're all setting at computers. And probably some people here are too. If you click on that little lock, it'll come up and say connection is secure. And on that little window, at least in my Chrome, the one I'm looking at is docs.google.com because I'm looking at my Google notes for this meeting.
Mm-hmm.
And it will say docs.google.com right there. What that's saying is, yeah, you're actually talking to a computer that is docs.google.com. And that's a good thing. If that said something like docs.google.com or...
Right.
Right? If it did, or if it didn't match, right?
Yeah.
Bad. Mm-hmm. Right? And this is just important. This is important from the sense that you know you're actually talking to the intended recipient, you know, the intended computer. I mean, it would be super easy, in an afternoon, I could set up a fetlife.com that was like, let's see, F3TL1FE.com, right? The three for the E and the one for the I. And then, you know, you might accidentally go there or I could trick you to go there, right? Mm-hmm. You might not notice because it's going to look just like FetLife. And then, you know, you enter your username and password. Then I just pass you on to FetLife.
Sure. So you're stealing info. Right.
Yeah. And of course, at that point, everything's over. They know, you know. So the most important thing about that lock is that you can go up there and verify you're talking to the right service. It's the one that's showing up in that URL bar right above it.
Mm-hmm.
It also should indicate, it says secure. What does that mean? It means it's encrypted and nobody can tamper with the data as it's being sent. But that's actually probably not even the most important part, right? So that's one general thing. And since we're talking about anonymity and privacy, anonymity means, you know, nobody knows who you are. Pseudonymity, it means you have a pseudonym like Rich, right? And, or whatever your profile name is.
Right.
Right. There are anonymity services out there on the internet. There's a free open one. I'm curious if you've ever heard of Tor.
I have heard of Tor. I have never personally used Tor. Okay. Back in the day, I used to use some Finnish anonymizer on Usenet because I'm old and
anon.funet.fi. Yes.
Yes.
I remember.
Yes. Yes.
Yes.
Way back when.
Yes, for email anonymity. So you could send, yep. Yeah, you could have anonymous emails. Yes, sure. The Tor project, T-O-R project, is sort of a collaborative open source anonymity thing, network. So basically what happens is you can download a browser to use this thing, and its goal is basically so you can pass your traffic around all over the place. And it's all sort of encrypted differently. And it makes it very hard for someone to tell where you're actually coming from.
So it doesn't record your IP address. And so if you, for example, let's say nefarious purposes were happening, you were engaged in some kind of illegal activity, a warrant sent to your ISP would not actually identify you.
Right.
It would identify some random IP number.
It would identify sort of the last link in this Tor network that finally spat you out.
Yeah.
Right. So you get kind of bounced around. It actually does look a little like those movie things you see when they're tracing and they're bopping things back around. You know, it's sort of like that. Now,
while we're having those moments of old internet people, my first email address, I would log in on a server, not a server, on a old amber single color node connected to the mainframe on my campus. And when you sent an email, it would actually show you the whole path as it went, like, oh, it's going to California, and now it's going to Illinois, and now it's going to Massachusetts. And
yep. And those headers are still there. Those headers are still there. You just don't see them.
Right. Right.
Yeah. But this, so this Tor thing, people see it because it's for anonymity, and it's good. Like, for instance, if I wanted to do whistleblowing, I would use it. You know, if I was trying to protect against someone, I mean, that would be a very legitimate thing. Well, let's say I knew something bad was going at the Department of Defense. And I wanted to blow the whistle, I might use it. It is used by criminals a lot for things like ransomware payments and things like that. The dark web, if you've heard of that, mm-hmm. Silk Road is based upon some of this technology. Okay. So the problem is there's not a lot of reason for us to use it. And here would be the one situation where I would say maybe you'd want to use it. So let's say you were, let's say you just absolutely had to use like, I don't know, one of your dating apps or something like FetLife, right? Because people are always squicked out about fetish. I like to use FetLife as an example. And you had your personal computer on a work Wi-Fi. So let's say you were at work, you had your own personal computer, and you said, I've just got to get on there and read that message. Yeah, that'd be okay, because basically, your job's Wi-Fi couldn't tell you were connecting to FetLife, right? Better idea, use your phone and turn off Wi-Fi, right? So this is another one of those tips from Uncle Rich. At work, turn off your Wi-Fi on your phone, because otherwise, you know, if you're those apps, you know, OkCupid, whatever, they're grabbing data. Your work can tell that you, I mean, if they really wanted to, they can see that that those apps are active.
Mm-hmm.
And potentially, even if you're not using them, I mean, you may leave them closed all day.
Wow.
Because it's going through their network, they can see the services you're visiting. And so if you're at work, I would turn off the Wi-Fi. I don't do a good job of it myself. But
if you want to be erring on the side of caution, this would be a thing you could do that would be a more cautious way of existing.
Right. Because, you know, then Verizon, you know, Verizon doesn't care that you're, you know, the fact that you go to FetLife, Verizon doesn't necessarily care.
Right.
Right. Because if you're using your cellular data, they, you know, they're sort of the first hop. Right. You know?
And Verizon doesn't know you're at work.
Yeah.
Unless you work for Verizon. But
so a lot of this information is kind of scary and intimidating, I imagine, especially to people like me who aren't super technologically literate. Do you have anything that's kind of a positive outlook for us when we hear all this stuff and just feel like, well, why bother? It's just it doesn't fucking matter because it's too much. I don't know. I'm getting a little overwhelmed. I'm like, oh my God, everyone knows everything about me.
So, So, you know, if I'll just back up to sort of the things I do every day, right? If you sort of protect your, you know, if you have a, you set up those emails, like we talked about, you know, you keep your identities separate, right? Your phone, it's really hard to protect, keep things separate in your phone. Just keep your phone well locked and secured. And like I said, maybe turn off that Wi-Fi at work. But I've never seen a case where anybody like somebody says, oh, well, you know, you're on a, you know, your OkCupid traffic is up. I have noticed though, public Wi-Fi is where things like OkCupid didn't work. Right. They blocked it.
Or websites like FetLife. Yeah. That happens.
Yeah. Definitely. Yeah. Sure. And that's reasonable. Right.
Right.
So yeah, I think that's, you know, I think that's a minor thing. I think your phone, you've just got to kind of do that. And if you're going to do that very, you know, there are lots of picture vault apps for your phone, sort of do your research for your platform, you know, get some, don't just download the first one you find on that app store because, hey, they may be sharing all those with, you know, I would be real careful about that. As far as the image thing, and I think the image thing, this whole location and images, if you're not emailing it or texting it or texting them around, for the most part, I think you're good because the services don't want you, the services are sort of taking that information out because they realize it's pretty scary. I gave a talk to a bunch of students about this and I was talking about online dating and I said, yeah, you know, anybody of you ever, have you ever emailed an image to somebody that you were just talking to? And I saw several people kind of, you know, recoil in horror, you know, like, yeah, you know, so that does happen, but I don't think it's common, right? Because we use chat apps. We use
secure that. Ways to talk. Yeah. I think that's
we use things, you know, Snapchat or, whatever, you know,
WhatsApp, some of those things.
WhatsApp.
Yeah.
Signal. I think WhatsApp does it as well. I think WhatsApp scrambles, takes that information out as well. But like I said, you can certainly turn that off in your phone. And like I said, you know, the online services just don't give any more information than you need to, right? Try to, you know, you got to give some location, right? Or it doesn't work, but you don't have to be specific about it.
Right. I know that I have in the past used sort of adjacent locations sometimes. Like, this isn't my zip code, but it's a zip code near mine.
Yeah, I use the wrong zip code for sure. Yeah. So, yeah, you know, limit or give, you know, slightly wrong answers. I use a pseudonym on dating sites and I occasionally get called awful things by women who think I'm being, you know, when I say, oh, my name is actually this, and they say, oh, you're obviously a horrible person. And
I sometimes don't even remember. I use a pseudonym on OkCupid and I'll be like, you know, talking to someone for weeks and be like, oh, by the way, you don't know my real name yet. Oops, I forgot. Yeah, but, you know, it's just like a, especially again, because my name is spelt weird. It's easy to find me. And some of that is on purpose. I like when people find me for these kind of purposes, promotional purposes. But when it comes to, finding my online dating persona and then, you know, finding where I work, that's not great. Don't love that.
Yeah. That's a little creepy.
Yeah.
John Smith is a great, or Jane Smith or, you know, whatever, are pretty good names for sure. But I think, you've got to make, if you want to try to do a good job of this, make it easy, you know, try to, especially on your computer, make it easy. Use that. You may think making that extra account makes it harder. No, it makes it much easier. Mm-hmm. And by the way, go ahead and set a different background on it.
Right. So you don't forget. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was at a conference once and opened up my laptop and breakfast table. And yeah, there was some really, really crazy stuff on that screen. I just about threw the laptop across the room and I had left it in the wrong account.
Oops. Yeah, different background, but not necessarily a dramatic, racy background.
Oh, no. It's just a different color for me.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I think we've got a lot of information, a lot of things to think about. Hopefully, folks will be a little bit more careful if you're worried. You know, some people don't worry about
these things. By the way, while we were on this, like recording this podcast, I went and Googled how do I turn off the geographic identifying information in my phone and opened up the privacy settings. I'm an iOS user and I had actually already turned them off in that. So that was reassuring to me as a person who is concerned about privacy. But it was super easy to check.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was still totally engaged in this conversation. The whole thing took 5 minutes.
Right.
And that includes me going down and saying, why do I let Kohl's have my information about where I am? That's stupid. So you know, it's pretty easy to do a privacy sort of check on your phone when you open up those settings. And I think that I must have assumed at some point in the past, why does my camera need to know where I am? Fuck that. Mm-hmm. And turned it off.
Well, and you know, I guess another thing to keep in mind. Yeah, that's awesome. But if you go to events, you know, if you go to events that are, you know, like this fantastic Trip to Desire that went to this fall or whatever, and people take, you know, people other than you take photos of you and somehow, you know,
yeah.
And maybe they send them to you. I mean, I'm not saying they're going to out you, but I'm saying if they send them to you, you might very well still want to go check, be sure that, hey, look at this great photo I had on vacation, you know, and right. Dad, who's an IT guy, loads it up and says, that's not the resort you were at. Right. Mm-hmm. Maybe not a major concern, but it could happen.
Right. Good point.
Yeah.
But yeah, this has been a really useful, thought provoking conversation. And I really appreciate you joining us, Rich, and sharing your expertise and, you know, trying to help folks in the community think about their safety and privacy and security, you know, maybe in some ways that hadn't occurred to them.
Well, it's my pleasure. I'm happy to do it. I would love to be able to just have my own venue just to throw out this stuff all the time, but I don't want to deal with all the anonymity issues with having to keep up something like that myself. So I'm happy to come do it with you guys.
That's totally fair. Yeah. Thank you so much for joining us today. This was great.
It really was. Thanks so much for reaching out and for being part of the podcast.
Thank you so much.
Hi, everybody.
Bye-bye.
And that is it from us at Polyamory Uncensored. We have been Lindsay Miller
and Katie Williams.
We'd like to thank podcast husband Rob for being our sound engineer.
And thank you, Lindsay, for editing this podcast so that we sound smart.
You can follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Polyamory Uncensored.
Contact us at polyamoryuncensored@gmail.com if you have a listener question or a comment.
And if you'd like to support us at all, you can send us a monthly contribution at anchor.fm/polyamoryuncensored and simply click on the Support This Podcast button.
If you'd like to support the podcast with a one-time contribution, we've set up a PayPal link to make it super easy. Thank you for your support in any amount at paypal.me/polyamoryuncensored.
We hope you've enjoyed this episode, and remember,
we love you. Bye.